Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Sarah McDewling. And we're across from Matt Stanton, who has come to talk about his new funny kid novel, Get Licked. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, you are one of the most prolific writers in Australia right now. You write under so many different guises, and you have different partnerships going on. Where do you find the time to continue writing novels? Through all this, because you've got picture books, you've got two sets of picture books.
Yeah.
But novels take a long time, and ideas take a long time too. Do you feel under pressure to keep this kind of?
How do you do it?
How the hell do you do it?
Well, I love it, which helps.
Yeah.
I very much I spend quite a lot of time working on the plot ideas in my head all the time, which I can be doing while I'm drawing something else, while I'm working on picture books. And so that sort of gestates for a while, and I kind of, over a period of months, will sort of build that out. And I've developed some systems for doing that. Like, I approach Funny Kid as a sitcom writer would approach a sitcom episode. So there's a few things there that help me to generate ideas and to protect me in a way from falling into sort of holes that will cause me problems later on. And then the actual writing is just really intensive. So I sort of block out everything else. And
When you talk about intensive, are you talking like you set aside 5 weeks of work hour days and trying to get it
out? Yeah, less. Yeah. But yes, less weeks. Like it's fast. The actual words going down is really fast. I write most of the chapters dialogue first, so I script them basically, mm-hmm. and then I write in and around them. And it's this process of I realized that the best way for me to approach writing is actually the same way that I approach drawing, and that took me years to work out that I did I was doing the two totally differently. Mm-hmm. Yet it actually makes sense for my brain to approach them the same way, which is to really sort of build it up in layers. So when I approach a drawing, I sketch it in super lightly first, and then you sort of work out where the shapes go, and you sort of assemble it, and you make sure it all sort of sits on the page and the composition is right. And then you start to build up layers. So you build in the actual shapes, you build in the lines, you build in details, and then you bring tone and lighting, and then you bring color if you don't get... So it also layers on top of each other. Whereas what I had been doing with approaching writing was having a sort of quite a loose outline and then sitting down page one and here we go. Whereas what I've realized is that it's better for me to approach it in that same way, so to build it up in layers. So it starts...
You smash through pretty much the whole story in dialogue, and then you come back and do another layer, and then you come back and do another layer. Is that...
Sort of, but before that. So thematically nutting out what the book is, then plot-wise... nutting out what the book is, and then chapter outlines, brief chapter outlines, and then detailed chapter outlines over the top. So all of that I do progressively while doing other things. I often write while walking to write straight into my phone to build those things up. And then the actual sort of putting it down, putting the actual words down is the sort of the last process in a way, yeah. which is sort of dialogue first, and then really building the scenes in. And that gives me, running over and over again, gives me the chance to do what I'm trying to do with these books, which is make every page as funny as I can.
Yeah.
So every time you're doing a sweep through, you're looking for humor opportunities that you might have missed before. So you'll write the scene as dialogue and try to get that dialogue as funny as you can. And then you'll go, but this is just a scene of two talking heads. So what sort of situation can I put them in at the same time that's going to be quirky and funny and relatable to kids? So let's put them in an awkward situation, or let's have something else going on in the background. And you layer that in. So it's quite a systematized process that I've developed.
And how far ahead are you? Like, do you have one day when you wake up and you're suddenly going, I've got three ideas for three new books? And are those kind of things? Or is it really... after one book's done and you hand it in, you go, right, empty page?
No, I'm usually a few books in front. Mm-hmm. So Get Licked is coming out for Christmas now. I finished writing the book for Funny Kid for mid next year, and I'm illustrating that at the moment while I'm writing book six, which is Christmas next year. And I've got further plots in my head. I have a big sort of spreadsheet that I use to record ideas. So rather than the sort of more romantic notion of a writer's notebook, I've got a spreadsheet, which is, I've established the cast of five characters now in the Funny Kids series. So five friends predominantly, and then there's Duck. And so with each of those five characters, I know what motivates them. I know what their sort of deep driver is. And so I'm constantly looking for character-driven ideas, things they might do, things they might try that line up with their sort of deep sort of character desire. And so I build those into this database. So I've got these long lists of just random little ideas of things these characters might do. And so when I'm approaching a new book, I've got a core idea, which I think is the most exciting, which becomes sort of plot A, which is Max's plot. But then I'm looking through those, all of those lists of other ideas for subplots that I can interweave in that might thematically connect, or might sort of, or even sort of contrast to kind of change the tone.
So if anyone out there who has lots and lots of money in their back pocket and a television station or a production company that's listening to this, please contact Matt Stanton. He's already got the things organized. It's already a film. It's already a series of comic television shows. I mean, it's...
I would love to see
that. I mean, because it's already done. He's done the work. All you have to do is pay him, and it's done.
That small thing.
Because when you started talking to him, I started thinking of all the different characters within Seinfeld.
Exactly.
You know, and in that same way, because you do have that Jerry line, and then they have all the different things going off at different characters all the time. And in these books, you have that happening as well. Is this something that you discovered as you were doing it, or is this something that you went, this is how I'm going
to
do it?
Well, you said you wrote it like a sitcom.
Yeah, so I studied that to kind of that sitcom writing style.
But did you study it to do sitcoms?
No. So I this is after sort of book two of Funny Kid. I realised I've got a problem, which is when I chat to kids in schools and kids ask me how many are you going to write, my standard answer, which is the answer I want to give, is you keep reading, I'll keep writing. Yeah. So I want to be able to do this as long as kids are enjoying reading them. So I realised I've got a problem, because if you approach a series like that in the way that you might normally approach sort of a hero's journey type plot line, where the character has a big sort of character change and an arc throughout the story, and they end up a different character by the end than they are at the beginning. Well, then you've got a bit of a problem if you want to write unlimited potential stories. So that led me to, okay, well, who writes unlimited potential stories? Well, sitcoms, The Simpsons, Seinfeld. And you realize that actually they have to write them without changing the character from start to finish. So how do you approach the story? What does happen in a story that still makes it satisfying without, where you return the characters effectively to their core of who the audience knows?
You just mentioned Simpsons. I'm imagining you in that Homer Simpson moment of Eureka, doing that little circle he does when he runs around and he's lying on his side and we'd be just so excited.
I mean,
it must have been like that when you've gone, holy crap, I can do this forever.
Well, it was like, if I can set this up right, then you should be able to just keep going.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean,
but you do need that strong supporting cast.
But he's done that. Like, he's set it in the first two books, he's set that up.
Yeah.
And so then you can, and that's just infinite delight.
Yeah, and it's really like, so I approach Funny Kid, these are my characters, these are the characters I like hanging out with, I like the way they relate together, I like the humour that comes from their conflict that's really inherently built into who they are. And now I can just sort of throw stuff at them and see what they do, and that's really fun.
Can we circle back to where you said, I just go for a walk and then I write while I'm walking? I don't know how that works.
Sure.
Seems dangerous.
I'm not the only one that does this. Tristan Banks is quite famous for writing and walking. I think he actually writes his novels in his phone walking along beaches along the far north New South Wales coast.
That's safer. Walking through the inner city.
Less cars, I guess. There's an ocean.
So I'm plotting when I do that. Or one of the things I talk to kids about at schools is I do this exercise with them where I create a funny story in front of them with them to sort of show them like a behind-the-scenes making of into my crazy head kind of experience. And they often observe that I walk around a bit like sort of quite crazily across the front. I'm pacing backwards and forth as I'm doing this stuff on the board. And I find one of the hardest things to do is to sit still, to sit behind a desk and to really get that creativity flowing. So if I'm ever stuck, the first thing I'm doing is going for a walk. And if I'm going for a walk and it's kind of helping me solve problems, I need to be able to write those down. So so my whole life exists within the Evernote app on my phone. So if they ever kind of die, I'm in trouble. But
have you ever bumped into anything while doing this? It just seems problematic.
Where are you living? Are you living in a built-up area? Or are you,
I do live by the beach. I live by the beach on the northern beaches of Sydney.
Okay.
So there's some bush tracks which are quite fun to go on. That I know quite well. Even just walking around, walking to the shops and back, things like that. Like it's no different to walking and reading on my phone, which is something else that I do.
Which also impresses me. I would walk directly into the first outpost that you could find.
It's all about peripheral vision.
Local author falls off cliff in Garigal National Park.
Something like that.
But I was just thinking, I had this image when you're talking about Tristan Banks on the beach of like an orca coming in and grabbing him because he wasn't watching. You know, like there were the seals.
Even if you're watching, can you really avoid that? I feel like all you do is scream and you're gone.
But yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, I my first thought was, I don't like outside, so I would get myself one of those one of the jogging machines where
like a treadmill.
A treadmill and just do it under the desk.
I've tried that.
Scary. Yeah.
Less likely to bump into stuff.
Yeah. Also the other part of this, I mean, the interaction you have with the kids in the schools is a creative process, obviously, for you. But you also, in these books, are kind of trying to stir up the creative process in them as well. It's kind of, in all your writing, you're kind of interacting. Your characters look directly at the at the kid reading and sort of involve them directly in this sort of thing, which is very meta.
We're operating on a very high level.
This is very, In that conversation, are you like, is it necessary for your process to have that communication with these kids? Is going to the schools now a part of that creative process?
Sure, yeah. Definitely. I think you've got to stay connected with your audience and really firmly have your audience in mind. I know that's crucial for me. So with each of our different series, so four different series, two picture book series, a junior fiction series and a middle grade series, which is what Funny Kid is. And so as we're doing that, and jumping between projects all the time, it's crucial that we have a really clear idea of who these books are for. And so I very much, I mean, that's another thing I say to kids in schools is I don't sit down and go, what story do I want to write? I sit down and ask myself, who do I want to write a book for? Who do I want to write a story for? And I find that incredibly helpful sort of creatively, to feel like you are not only creating something for someone in mind, but you're serving them. That's the act of what you're creating. I'm creating these books for these kids that I meet, that I talk to, that I joke with, so that if it doesn't work for them, then I need to do something else.
Like a stand up comic, going out there and the joke doesn't work, it's not in the next show.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. And so. So as we've done, like we've published six books this year and then I've been in two short story anthologies as well. So it's been a big year this year. But I'm reducing to a degree the amount of time I can spend in schools. Mm. But as much as my view at the moment is it can never go away. It might need to be kind of restricted to a particular touring season.
Yeah.
But it's got to be there because the second I lose touch with who I'm writing them for, because my kids are younger than Funny Kid, so it's kind of different. But the second I lose touch of who they're for and the kids who are struggling with reading, like that's very much forefront in my mind. These books are like, not every kid says they love to read, but every kid loves to laugh. So that's the way into these books. That's what they're for.
Well, you already got, I mean, my nephew, just wasn't reading, like stuck on the iPad and like it just gobbles down your books.
Great, yeah. Fantastic.
And that's the kind of thing I love seeing that. That's so many parents, if you've got that kind of kid who just doesn't seem that reading is any fun.
Yeah.
To wander in and find them chuckling away at a book is just a great delight.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I feel really passionate about that because it's amazing to me how early on in a kid's life they can adopt the phrase, "I hate reading," and then just use that to define themselves, to use that as a label, that's who I am. Possibly their parents even use it, or other adults they know use that line, and so, I don't read, I hate reading.
Becomes part of your identity.
Exactly, and it's just not true. Like, it's... I often use the analogy that no one says they hate movies. Like, we've all got movies that we hate, but no one hates all movies.
Mm.
No one hates all music. And so the idea that you can just go, "I hate reading," like, no, you hate reading possibly everything you've read so far.
Yeah.
although what I find is that kids, when they're saying, "I hate reading," they're not thinking about the latest, issue of their surfing magazine or reviews of bands online or social media or graphic novels. They are reading actually all sorts of things, but they've assigned this label somehow, possibly to school readers or to texts that they've had to read and just it's felt like work, or they've struggled to learn to read and to develop the muscle of reading, and so it's really hard and it's challenging. And so Funny Kid is for all kids, but specifically in my mind are kids that have sort of said, "I don't read."
Yeah.
Because and that's why the books engage the kids directly from page one. Like, there's Max talking to the kid. It's like, "I want your attention and I'm going to try and make you laugh straight away." Because then you'll be into this book before you realize you're reading a book. That's the idea.
I actually got a taxi driver the other day and we got talking. He asked me what I did and he's like, "I don't read. I hate reading." Right. And I was like,
"Challenge
Jesus.
Accepted."
Yeah. I was like, okay. But I discovered within a few minutes of discussing stuff with him, I sort of found that he had read books in his life. He was like in his 50s.
Yeah.
And I was able to talk to him. And then when I had a discussion around the books he liked, suddenly he was animated and going, So these kind of books, you might even find a kid who's read Funny Kid and still says, "Yeah, I hate reading thing." And then you mention Funny. "Oh, no, but they're all right."
Yes. Yeah,
They're cool. And that's just like a little door opening and a reminder of how much fun they actually have doing it.
Yeah, I had an email from a teacher last night saying that she had two boys in her Year 6 class that have declared that they hate reading. She got them onto Funny Kid. They're taking Funny Kid home. They're both up to book two. They're about to start book three. They're both reading about it. They're talking about it. And what that means is, even if the challenge of reading continues, which, it probably will, they can, like, the answer that teacher can give when they say, "I hate reading," is, well, you don't hate all reading.
Yeah.
Because you liked that. So if you liked that, you might like this. Like, reading is supposed to be exploring. It's supposed to be finding what it is that you like to read and what you don't. And it's fine to hate some books. I think that's totally fine.
Sounds like a wonderful teacher.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, because I went through teaching schools in Redmond when they were horrible. And they're much nicer now, I'm told. I haven't gone back to do Year 12 again. But, there's that sense that you got to read this book.
Yeah.
Especially in my era, you read this book. Yeah. If you didn't like this book, then you're never going to read. But they seem to be much more inclusive and more generalised in the way they approach this reading these days. And I find it really interesting that they can be that flexible, and they're that aware also of the esteem of these kids, the self-esteem of these kids.
Yeah.
Because if you're in Year 6 and you've been given a book for a Year 3 kid and you've enjoyed it, it's kind of embarrassing and it has to be handled with care. And it seems wonderful because so many different writers for kids are coming in talking about schools in ways that I don't recognize.
Yeah, sure.
As part of my
isn't that amazing?
Yeah, yeah. It's such a massive change in school these days, and librarians as well.
Teacher librarians are a huge part of that.
Yeah, because librarians when I was going through it, was terrifying.
Sure.
All I wrote about was being quiet and
returning your book on
returning
time.
Book on time and fines.
When I hear you talk about your schooling, I just feel like I must have been so blessed with amazing teachers and librarians.
I was in school with Dickens. Well, my teachers were. They taught Dickens.
Yeah, the teacher librarians that I'm meeting as I travel around schools are phenomenal people who on the whole are just driven by this desire to, you know, you've got this set of kids in your life for this many years and your job is to, like, get them to catch the bug.
Yeah, and it's working. And we're seeing it. Kids' books are dragging a whole lot of... I mean, Harry Potter changed a whole generation of kids into readers. And, you know, there's a worry that once that had gone away, that there would, but there, people have just jumped in there. And all the... I mean, books are no longer thought of in the way they were, and kids are really embracing it. I mean, I love your social media with the shots of you at schools and the like, because it seems so unnatural to me that school would be that much fun. But you make it, you drag the kids out and you have so much fun with them.
I mean, that's great. Yeah. And yeah, that's my biggest goal when going into schools is to demonstrate and include kids in an experience that reading can be fun and your imagination is fun.
So this has been a big year for you. Is this how your life is going to be? Is it going to be this many books every year from now on, or is this just one of those peak periods where everything lined up?
Like, no, this many from now on plus the TV show.
Right? Yeah, plus the TV show, yeah.
We're not stopping. So we've done that many books this year and had a baby and bought and sold a house and a whole bunch of other stuff. So
does that baby find you funny?
Loaded question. No, she doesn't yet, but I'm working on that. She finds my 5-year-olds funny, but not
me. We were talking about this earlier. We were talking about, because you've got an audience at home to test your work on. I mean, not Funny Kid, because they're not old enough yet, but
yes.
Your other books.
Yeah.
And to have one kid just shake the head, no.
No, she's not having a bar on it.
But she's got time. She's got time.
It's pushing me to be better.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. She's down here to improve everything. Give you higher goals to go for. Matt, thank you so much for coming in. It's been so much fun talking to you. There's so many things to talk about with you because there's so much going on in your career. Congratulations on your success across so many areas. Just marvellous.
Thank you so much. Thank you for Booktopia's incredible support, and it's a wonderful to be here again. And
I just want to see kids on beaches and in parks holding Funny Kid this Christmas, the whole lot.
You're going to say writing their own books.
Writing their own books.
Bumping into each other on the beach. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And you can get hold of everything Matt Stanton's ever written at booktopia.com.au right now. But if you really want to have a whole lot of bunch of giggling kids, get hold of the Funny Kids series and really watch and have a massive smile on your face.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.